This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Few recent photographs have created the stir of the naked, pregnant Demi Moore on the cover of Vanity Fair. That's just one of the many provocative photos taken by my guest, Annie Leibovitz. She's famous for getting famous people to pose in audacious ways. There's her photo of an unclothed Bette Midler, covered only by dozens of roses. Leibovitz shot Roseanne Barr and her husband Tom Arnold mud wrestling in their bathing suits. She posed Whoopi Goldberg in a bathtub of milk. Leibovitz's gallery of celebrities also includes Michael Jackson, Meryl Streep, Susan Sontag, and Václav Havel. You've probably seen her portraits in Vanity Fair and in magazine ads for The Gap and American Express. For 13 years, she was with Rolling Stone and did some of their best-known covers. A retrospective of her work opens Friday at New York's International Center of Photography. And her photos are collected in a new book. On the cover is one of her most famous pictures, which originally appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone. It was taken just a couple of hours before John Lennon was murdered. He and Yoko Ono are posed in bed. John is naked, in a fetal position, curled around Yoko, who is fully clothed in jeans and a sweater.
This is not anything new for the Lennons, really. They, you know, they spent their career being photographed and televised from their bedroom, you know, and from bed.
Their bed-ins.
Their bed-ins, yes. And this was, you know, I was asked to do the cover of John for Rolling Stone magazine, and John really felt that he wanted Yoko, you know, there with him, that Yoko was part of him. And I really felt that this, they'd been together 10 years, and the story was that they had a rough time of it, and they were back together again, and they were more madly in love than ever. And I really wanted to photograph them in an embrace. And I had wanted to photograph them both nude. I mean, this was not, you know, they also posed nude with the Two Virgins album cover. And at the last minute, Yoko decided that she didn't want to take her, she would take her shirt off, she wouldn't take her pants off. I said, well, why don't you leave everything on? And then it became this, you know, very startling contrast of John, very naked and embryotic, curled up against Yoko in a very, very dark figure, sort of a mother-child relationship. But, you know, it was funny, looking back over my 20 years of work, which is what this book is, I see that I was trying to take this kind of picture for some time. There's and John and Yoko became the the solution to wanting to do this. I mean, wanting to show this embrace. I mean, he symbolized that whole era to me.
Your photos have gone over the years from the more candid kind of shot to the more posed kind of shot, a pose that almost, you know, symbolizes who the person is or who they represent. Can you talk a little bit about how you changed and why you changed?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I started, I came from a school of photography, of fine art photography, where my the people I admired were Robert Frank and Cartier-Bresson, and I really admired street photography. And when I started to work for Rolling Stone, I was still going to school, and I sort of embodied this work into the Rolling Stone work, and it became a kind of journalism. And I found myself just photographing what I saw in front of me. As years evolved, and as I kept working for Rolling Stone, I was doing the covers more and more. And the idea of people coming to me and being there for an hour and saying, okay, what do you want to do? You know, suddenly I was faced with the idea of, well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, not exactly that you had to make up life, but that, I began to realize that the cover was a different situation than the inside work in the magazine, and that's how the portrait work really evolved, was really shooting for the cover of Rolling Stone. And I learned, I began to really enjoy that process of looking at a person for whatever time I was allowed to have, and sort of coming to a summation or a final photograph.
So what is the difference between a cover and what's inside?
Well, that's a good question today. It still evolves. I mean, in the 80s, early 80s, I really enjoy the more complicated conceptual covers, and I really had a great time with them, the Steve Martin cover and Bette Midler and the Roses, and it wasn't long before, magazine basically wanted to test what worked out there to sell. I mean, the cover really is used to sell the magazine, and it's unfortunate for me because I really enjoyed the more conceptual things. I thought that the conceptual covers did well, but it turned out that recognizability is still the main factor. And it's made me sort of not find the cover my most exciting assignment to do. I mean, I really love the inside work.
When you photograph an actor, an actress, someone who's really well known, mm-hmm. do they have approval of what photos get used? Do they ask to see them beforehand?
It happens sometimes. Tina Brown works really hard to fight things like this, but it does happen. But she more and more is putting her foot down and really trying to hold strong to it.
How do you feel about a person having photo approval?
Well, I think I work very differently. I really like to work with the person. And I'd say a good, 80 to 90% of my shootings, I like to like the person and I like to have a collaboration because I feel like I get the most work, the best work from that. And, I'm in trouble when you send me out to photograph someone really crafty because I don't want to, because I really do enjoy liking somebody.
How do you begin a shoot? What kind of work do you do as soon as you meet the person you're photographing?
Well,
or what kind of work do you do before you've even met them?
It's different. It depends on the time. I don't really go overboard, although it's one of the wonderful sidebars of my work is, for example, when I went to photograph Suzanne Farrell, the ballerina who's now retired. I ended up seeing the season at the New York City Ballet. It was it was really great. Before I actually photographed her. Robert Penn Warren, I read all his recent books of poetry. It depends. If it's an actor, I'll try to see his latest movie. Sometimes I'll ask for all. It's easy now with the VCR to go home with 8 or 9 videos and watch everything they've done.
You have a beautiful, very elegant photograph of Ella Fitzgerald. And this is a photograph of her wearing a very beautifully tailored red suit. She's already lost a lot of weight from her recent illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really handsome photograph.
Is it the one in the book? Or is it the American Express portrait?
The one in the book in a red suit.
Uh-huh. Because the one in the book is an outtake from the American Express portrait campaign. But that was a wonderful day. I mean, that she had just gotten over a long illness, and she had lost a lot of weight. And that that suit is her suit. It was in her closet, and we met with her a couple weeks before the shooting, and we had the suit taken in so it fit her to the T. And that was one of these shootings where, the journalism does fall by the wayside. There's no two ways about it. I mean, she was not in the best of health. She could barely stand up, and this was her first project she had done in several months, and the real photograph would have been astonishing to sort of see her, in a corner, barely being able to stand up. And I wanted her to be Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, I just wanted her, to be, as best, as I wanted her to be strong and great. And she got up and she became Ella Fitzgerald in front of my eyes. That's one of those shootings where the experience was better than the photograph. The photograph is sort of the aftermath. She was just so excited and she felt great. And she as soon as she got the clothes on and she, she kept belting out, "I'm bad, I'm bad," you know. I asked her to sing, and she kept screaming, "I'm bad, I'm bad," you know. It's really amazing.
So it doesn't bother you that you're not shooting the person exactly as they are, that you're making them different from what they are, or, you know, more healthy than what they are.
Well,
what you want is to show your image of the person, or to show them at their best.
I guess the photographer has a lot of power, I mean, in that respect. As I said, I think people should be able to look as good, you know, or as great as they possibly can look. But I think it's about, I don't want it to seem a little corny, but there is an inner beauty involved, and if bringing that out is, I mean, I'm not, both those pictures are Ella Fitzgerald to me, her sitting there and, you know, in the corner, barely being able to stand up, and then standing up, you know, and looking like Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, they're both parts of her, and, you know, and I see it all the time, and you have so many different sides of a person to decide what, you know, what you're going to photograph. And you know, I'm definitely, I know I'm not doing journalism anymore. I'm doing editorial. I have an opinion, you know, and you know, it changes. It changes.
Let me ask you about a photo that's in a way the opposite of the Ella Fitzgerald photo, and I'm thinking of a photo that you took of Al Sharpton mm-hmm. at the hairdresser's,
mm-hmm.
and Sharpton is, his head is all in rollers,
mm-hmm.
and he's under the hair dryer, and he's wearing one of those shmatas that's supposed to protect your clothes from your hair, you know, as they're cutting your hair, and, I mean, who would want to get photographed you know, with rollers under the hairdryer, let alone a man, right?
I don't think Al Sharpton would miss any opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what he was thinking, you know. No, that came about because I had a session. We were set to meet, and then I got a call from his office, and they said, "I'm sorry, but the Reverend will be an hour late." And I said, "Oh, really? Can we push the shooting back?" I said, "Oh, really? Why? What is the problem?" He said, "Oh, he has to go to his hairdresser's." And I said, "Really?" And I said, "Where is that?" And then, you know, and they said, "Well, the Prima Donna Hair Salon in I think it was Brooklyn." And I said, "Oh, would the Reverend mind if I met him there?" And they said, "No, absolutely not." And I arrived there, and you know, it was right in front of me. I don't know. It's just it was crying to be photographed, so I did.
He didn't mind. He didn't ask
no,
you to not,
not
shoot him then.
No, not at all. Actually, what the funny story about that photograph is that we were doing this for the Hall of Fame for Vanity Fair a couple of years ago, and you know, I brought it in, and Tina was very, very excited about it. And he, when Sharpton realized that I was interested in it, and he saw that there was an interest in this facet of his life, he called up the New York Post photographer and had him come over the next day, and he repeated the same thing for him, and they ran it on the cover of the New York Post, and then Tina decided not to use the picture because it was already, you know, it was already used. So the first time that you're seeing the picture is in the show in the book because, you know, Tina thought it, and I said, "Tina, but this is a little better than the one that ran in the Post." And no, but the content was still there, and you know, he sort of, yes, Tina likes to use, you know, likes to break the news. So,
do you have a different relationship now with the people who you photograph since you're so well known yourself, compared to when you started, when nobody knew who Annie Leibovitz was, but you were photographing people who were already pretty famous?
I don't really think so. I think things feel a little easier for some reason, but I find that people are willing to work harder for a photograph. Since what I've done is work and continue to work and that's my main interest. And the photograph is the most important result of our work together. I don't think things have changed that much, you know. I mean, it, as far as the relationship with the person that I'm photographing,
mm-hmm.
I'm much more comfortable because I'm older, you know, and I've been doing it now for 20 years.
My guest is photographer Annie Leibovitz. You've seen her work in Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, and in the ads for Gap and American Express. She has a new collection of photos called Annie Leibovitz, 1970 to 1990. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Photographer Annie Leibovitz is my guest. I want to talk with you about some of your early work in your early days at Rolling Stone magazine when you were photographing a lot of rock musicians. You've said that in those earlier days you had crushes on a lot of the musicians you had to photograph. Did that get in the way for you?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I was young. I was impressionable. You know, I'm a little older today, but if I got in the car with Bruce Springsteen, I'd still, you know, go, you know, my heart be beating a little faster. I mean, he's, you know, it's great to keep that, I think. You know, it's and when I was younger, there was more of a peer feeling, actually, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, I knew Jerry Garcia, and it was much more of a, friendlier time in a certain way. It's great. It's great if you're going to take someone's photograph part of the process is sort of being obsessed anyway, you know, so you might as well, you know, fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it was fun to sort of have crushes I mean, I always kept the camera on, you know, and took photographs. But, you know, that certainly made the time go by faster, easier. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was great.
Did you ever have to convince the musicians that you were there to be a professional and not a groupie, knowing how...
No, I was always a photographer. You know, that's what I was there to do. I mean, as I said, I started as a fine art photographer and... you know, I always felt that these people were walking through my photographs. I mean, I didn't feel the other way around. I mean, I said I appreciated and enjoyed, their music and enjoyed them as personalities. But that's as far as I went. I always knew I was a photographer, and that's what I was there to do, and that's what I really enjoyed to do. That was the most important thing to me.
When you were traveling with a rock musician on a tour, was there an understanding of what was going to be off limits to your camera? Would anybody like draw the line at the beginning of the tour and say, you could do this, but you can't photograph that?
You know, I didn't do that. I tell you what, I didn't do that much rock and roll. I actually, in 1975, when Mick Jagger asked me to be the tour photographer of the Rolling Stones and for their 75 tour, I actually left Rolling Stone for a few minutes and did the tour. And against Jan Winter's advice, he said, please don't do it. And I said, I have to go do it. And I traveled with this band of men for four or five months. And I did it. You know, I said, I'm not doing it again. and I never really, went back to it, that's seriously after that. I didn't really know how music was made until I traveled with that band.
Well, there's one photo, and I think this is from that tour, where Keith Moon is backstage with about six women who were in various states of undress, and he's got, one hand on one woman and the other hand on another.
He was very theatrical. You know, it's very interesting, but I found out just recently in the last couple of years that he set up the photograph for me.
Oh, really?
That photograph was that he hired a bunch of girls. He knew I was coming.
You're kidding.
And that he waited till I walked backstage, and that they were these little trailers, and they just all undressed and did this thing, and then apparently I walked out of the trailer and he paid the girls and they all went home. I mean, I think it's very funny.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. It's great. It's great. I mean, he was Mr. Theater himself. I mean, there you go.
To give a sense of how theatrical the photo is, I mean, it's not only like...
I mean, you think I set up pictures. I mean...
Right. These, you know, I mean, the couch was even propped up against the wall. That's how...
Oh, yeah. No, they made it look like a very wild scene,
yeah.
No, I'm sure this is based on real life, but...
right.
I'm sure it's based on real life.
Not the real thing, but a wonderful facsimile of it.
I'm sure it gets worse.
Right. Yeah. You photographed a lot of people who have a touch of exhibitionism in them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
it's tough, I tell you.
Yeah, I wonder if you feel you have any in yourself. And I feel, forgive me, I feel so kind of unprepared here.
I don't know if you hang around with these people long enough. It's, yeah, no.
I have read, and I should have seen this, but I just found out about it, and I haven't had time to try to get my hands on it. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that you photographed yourself topless for a recent Vanity Fair.
It's so funny. I don't think of it as topless.
I haven't seen it.
No,
so.
Actually, I've been asked over and over again, how would I take my self-portrait? And I promised Vanity Fair that I was going to try to do it. And I've been trying for the last, year to try to do it. And, I've always imagined the photograph being very, very stark and very, very simple. And it's that feeling you have when I almost want no ideas in it, that basically you just come out of the shower and your hair's still wet and you sort of look like an embryo or a frog or something. And that, that was the start of it. But I can see that this self-portrait process is going to take, a few years. I'm still too far away in that picture. And it's actually an interesting process. And I'm going to keep working on it for the next, probably the rest of my life. But until I can come in close enough, even on myself. I mean, I'm still pretty far away in that picture.
And how do you feel about being that exposed yourself?
It's what I do. I mean, that's my work. That's my art. I shouldn't be any less susceptible to it than anyone else.
Andy Leibovitz, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Annie Leibovitz's new book is called Annie Leibovitz Photographs, 1970 to 1990. A retrospective of her work opens Friday at the International Center of Photography in New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.